Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland in today for Lori Walsh. And joining me now is Sarah Lampert. She is the Assistant Professor of History and Coordinator of the Women, Gender, and Sexuality Program at the University of South Dakota. Sarah, thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
Also in the studios at the University of South Dakota is Tim Shorn. He's the Associate Professor of Political Science, also at USD. Tim, thanks for being there.
It's good to be here.
So we're going to talk about a couple of different topics, but Sarah, let's talk with you about gender in this presidential election. Talk a little bit about what that looked like and how the end results played out.
Well, I think for those of us who were very excited about a female presidential nominee from a major political party, this election was a great disappointment. One of the things that we saw in this election was an extremely brutal contest in which Hillary Clinton's lifelong public service was often diminished by attacks on her integrity and attacks on her that I think were incredibly gendered as well. She faced an opponent who had a very dismissive attitude towards women's rights, towards women, period, and who was very unapologetic about his views of women and LGBTQ individuals. And I think it's incredibly concerning for many of us that some of the policies that he has espoused are potentially going to be carried through in this administration.
And Tim, feel free to jump in this conversation. I know you're here to talk about, you know, foreign policy in the Trump administration, but let's just open up this conversation and talk a little bit about Donald Trump and, you know, and the voters that turned out to vote and their view on women.
Well, I think one of the surprises as I look at the numbers this morning would be the number of voters who didn't turn out. Right now, it is looking like the turnout is lower in absolute numbers than it was in 2012, which was a drop-off from 2008. And the question becomes, why did they stay home, and who was it who actually stayed home? From what we see from the exit polling, the gender gap has increased. But were there a number of women, regardless of race, religion, ethnicity, who chose not to vote, that for some reason neither candidate appealed, or which men stayed home? And I don't think we're going to know that answer for a few more days, but it's going to be an important lesson for the parties and future candidates, both in 2018 and 2020.
And reaching out to those voters in the future, Sarah, how's that going to work?
Well, I think that one of the things that Hillary Clinton said in her concession speech is that we need to be committed to our democracy. We need to never stop believing that fighting for what's right is worth it. And I think that continued grassroots political work and advocacy work will only grow. And I hope it grows because we have a lot of power on a number of different levels as citizens. And we need to remember to stay engaged and to work for those causes that we really believe in.
Do you think gender really divided the country?
I think it did. I think the number of women who have tried to run for president in our country reminds us, and so at this point we have 15 women who've tried to run for president since 1872, and I think that we continue in our culture to view ambitious women with great suspicion, to view them differently than we view ambitious men. And I think that we need to really think with ourselves about how we're promoting and encouraging women to run for office, how we talk about gender, how we relate to each other, how we think about female ambition, and also how we talk about women's rights, how we talk about sexual violence, how we talk about just the general human rights issues that are so much a part of this campaign.
And to build on that, as we wrap up the 8 years of the first African-American president and now the end of the campaign by Hillary Clinton, the question becomes, are these one-off occurrences. We haven't seen the normalization yet of an African-American candidate leading the top of the ticket. We haven't seen yet the normalization of a woman leading at the top of a major party's ticket. And so the concern that I would have is that we slip back to the point where it's going to be an oddity when the next African-American, when the next woman appears on the top of a ticket, ignoring for the moment the Hispanic or Latino community, ignoring for the moment the Asian community. It's going to be a long time, my fear is, before we see another non-white Christian male heading the top of a presidential ticket.
Absolutely.
And did this election at all have an impact on the glass ceiling?
I think it reminds us that we need to work at many different levels of our society. One of the things I was going to talk about had Hillary Clinton won the election is that we need to be careful how we signify the significance of that event, because sometimes overstating gains or what it means for one person, one white woman to become president, doesn't necessarily, to use a very common metaphor, trickle down to women of all backgrounds, of all races and ethnicities, and also I think LGBTQ individuals who are incredibly concerned about their civil rights right now and about their safety and how much our democracy respects them.
And Tim, let's transition and talk a little bit about the Trump administration and what's that going to do with relations with minorities in the United States as well as across the world.
Well, one of the things that the United States has had going for it, and we haven't always lived up to that beacon on the hill reputation, is that we have done a better job than many other countries in including people who are outside the majority, if you will. And I have to think that as other countries now look at how this campaign has played out and some of the rhetoric that was used by presidential candidate Trump has to diminish some of the moral authority that the United States still has on the world stage, which is going to make it more difficult then to work with countries and leaders of countries who are attempting to move forward on identity issues, on human rights issues, on international legal issues. So what happens within the country is very much going to influence our standing and our ability to work with others outside of the borders.
Middle Eastern issues, ISIS?
Well, and I've been giving that a bit of thought. We know what the rhetoric has been from a presidential candidate, Trump. Now, we have no idea who's going to show up in the Oval Office in late January. Is it going to be the presidential candidate, or is it going to be the more magnanimous, thoughtful person who spoke early this morning? And the answer is we don't know. There are a significant number of European leaders who are going to be very hesitant to ally themselves with the United States in a fight against ISIS when the president-elect has talked about utilizing torture, hinting at indiscriminate bombing, talking about Muslims and others in somewhat prejudicial language. It's going to be very hard to build a coalition around that rhetoric. Now, that being said, German Chancellor Angela Merkel released a statement today that said that German and America are joined together by common values, and she looks forward to a continued positive working relationship with the United States. And I think what she's saying is that, we are here to work with you if, in fact, you live up to the shared values that we have espoused since 1945, 49, somewhere in there. But if you don't, then we're going to hold you accountable.
And the cabinet that Donald Trump puts together, how important is that?
Well, it will be important, but what is more important is, does a President Donald Trump fill the seats with experts? Does he fill the seats with sycophants? Does he, in fact, listen to expert advice and act moderately, we can expect a good deal of frustration on his part because as a businessman, he expected to get things accomplished fairly quickly. That doesn't happen when you're working through various executive agencies, not to mention Congress and potentially the Supreme Court.
Are we going to see massive deportation of Muslims and illegal aliens here?
I think what we'll initially see is a significant number of self-deportations, that they're going to feel increasingly unwelcome, perhaps unsafe, and not just amongst illegal aliens, but also those who are here on work visas, student visas. There's already a concern amongst students studying in the United States from abroad that they're going to be significantly less welcome and less protected.
The Iran deal, Trump has been critical of that. Where does that end up now?
Well, he and the United States Senate may very well decide that they want to set the Iran deal aside. That being said, it doesn't mean that the Iran deal dies. It just means that we are now left out of the process, having unilaterally removed ourselves from the forum. That also means then that as other actors move forward in relations with Iran, that the Iranian economy will be closed to the U.S., but open for investment from other countries. So we may very well take a very strong stand under President Trump against Iran, but it's only going to benefit other countries and their desires to reach out to Iran and its economy.
And Russia in this election, did it really play a general role and impact it?
That is a good question, and I'm not sure we'll ever really know the answer. However, I really doubt that President Putin is disappointed today, and apparently there were a number of Kremlin insiders who were having their own watch party. It would have been this morning in their time zone, and we're rather thrilled with the outcome of the election. It is going to change the nature of American relations unless President Trump and his eventual cabinet give American relations a rather sober second thought before they embark on radical new paths.
And as we discuss foreign relations, who is the top of the list for Secretary of State?
Well, that is also a good question. Clearly, Newt Gingrich would hope to get an appointment in the Trump administration, and I've certainly heard him mentioned in the same breath as Secretary of State. Former U.S. Ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, would love to become Secretary of State, which would certainly make for interesting discussions in my classes. So we'll have to wait and see. Also, who's willing to serve under a President Trump? There are going to be a lot of people who feel if they get the phone call, it is their duty to serve. But if they are working for a president who is in complete opposition to the ideals and values that they hold, are they going to be able to say yes to that invitation?
All right. Tim Shorn, I want to thank you for taking time, and also Sarah Lampert. Thank you for taking time and coming on the program today.
Thank you.
My pleasure.